Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week, we're going to be speaking about looking at the news through the prism of Torah. Andrew Cuomo, allegations, number of women against him. How do we balance protecting the abused, on the other hand, protecting the reputation of the accused before we have a Beis Din, before we have Rayos? You know, once you choshed a person, once you call the police, their reputation is gone. Then the police do an investigation. What's the Torahic view of this? We had similar problem now with Woody Allen last year with Judge Kavanaugh. So it's a current topic. We're going to have Rabbi Moshe Taub. He's published on this topic of balancing chshad, protecting from the predator, right? On the other hand, protecting the reputation of the accused. We will have Yochanan Dunn. He's a columnist for the Mishpacha, Ami, Yated, Hamodia. And he's going to speak about, is kosher media doing a good job of protecting people? Or because of chshad of Lashon Hara, they don't inform and therefore perpetrators can get away with it. Like, you know, we had a perpetrator in a yeshiva who did it for 25 years, got away with it. Are they doing a good job? We'll have Keshet Star. She's the CEO of Ora, Orthodox Resolution for Hagunas. She's going to be speaking about allegations during bitter divorce cases. And Menachem Rosenfeld, who's a mediator, Rabbi Menachem Rosenfeld, who's a mediator, he deals with divorce also. How does he and how does the professionals deal with allegations in all the above situations? We would love to hear the comments of the B'nai Yeshiva Shalmaila. You can call us at 732-806-8700, you press number 2, or email info@headlinesbook.com. As always, we will put online or on the phone line any of the voicemails we get or any of the emails we get unless requested otherwise. In that case, we respect the privacy of the individual. We do not put on any anonymous calls. If you're dialing from an anonymous number, it just doesn't deserve the respect to be put online. We started a number of weeks ago Daf Headlines. It's a 3-minute or 4-minute vert on every daf halacha, like something that's relevant, and a little vert of on the parasha afterwards. Like this week, we're going to be speaking about kollel or go to work, and it's all coming out of the daf. Can you eat mur if you have COVID? How do you make a bracha? You can't taste it. Is it a bracha levatol? I believe it is. You'll hear the logic. For the same thing, could you make a bar mini b'samim if you can't smell because of COVID? A lot of people will be nechshel in mur unless you tell them that you heard here otherwise. We're going to be speaking about saying halal and yom ha'atzmaut. Was the Atma Rebbe right or wrong? We'll be speaking about the most famous Avnei Nezer in the Sefer. When you say it over by the Seder, your sons-in-law are going to look at you and you're saying, wow. Every day, starting after Parshas HaChodesh Sunday, we will, instead of saying Avart on the Parsha, we will say Avart on Pesach. So you come armed to the Seder. You can take notes if you'd like. I think you'll hear some fabulous Torah. Before we go to our guest, I want to say Avart. We're going to say by the Haggadah, Baruch HaMakayim Baruch Hu Keneged Arba Banim Divrei Torah. HaMakayim is one of the most rare names for Kaviyachal. In the Seder, we say Baruch Ato Hashem Aleikenu numerous times. We say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chisheves HaKeitz HaMakayim one time. What's the meaning of it? And why does it appear here? So where's the first time in the Torah we have the Shem Makayim? It says by Yaakov Avinu when he's running away from Esau from home. It says Vayifka ba Makayim Chazal Darshan. Bein Shalom's called Makayim Shalaylam. Why over there? Let me share with you. Yaakov was born in the house of Yitzchak, house of royalty. But his mother tells him, your brother Misnachim Alecha Lahargecha wants to kill you. Run for your life. So he leaves home, but he leaves fortified, with money, with food, with clothing, driving like a prince. Along the way, Eliphaz comes, he says, he catches up to him, he says, my father said I should kill you. So Yaakov says, Ani chashiv kemeis, take my goods. Now Yaakov is both homeless and penniless as well. And where is he going? What does his future look like? Yaakov, who's titein emes liyaakov, is going to the house of the crook, Lavan Arami, one of the most crooked people in the Torah. Hechlafti es maskurti aseres moinim. Yaakov is really in dire straits. What happens? Vayifka b'makayim. He thought the world, the rug was pulled out from under his feet. He was floating. Vayifka b'makayim. The Rabbeinu Shalom is makayim shalom. He always has a place for you. Where else do we see it? Somebody loved, beloved dies, a family member, and the person is standing there. It could be a son, a daughter, a sibling, Rahman al-Islam, a child. And what are they thinking? They're crying and they say, how do I live without you? How can I live without you? And what do we say? Hamakim yinachem eschem. Your face is stained with tears. Tears are called dmois. The word dima is from damua, confused. You're just wondering. You don't know how you're going to move forward. Hamakim yinachem eschem. Or in the bitter gullus. You know, thousands of years in America, we forget it. But for the most part, we lived under in very hostile environments. We lived under Christians and Crusades. We lived under the Spanish and the Inquisition. We lived under the thumbs of Chelmanitsky, Yimach Shemai. What do we say? Achenu kol beis Yisrael. Hanesunim batzara ubashivya. In captivity. Hamakayim yirachem aleim. You feel like you have no place? There is always a place. The Rabbeinu Shalom always has a makam for you. Tachas royos olam. You think you're falling off the earth? The zroyos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will catch you. He is the makayim shel olam. So think of it. I'm sure many of us have the most wonderful children, but many of us don't. And what do we just don't understand that with children. Today's children, let's face it, when I was growing up, marijuana wasn't legal. There were no drinking clubs, you know, or kiddish clubs. So what is the Seder? The Seder starts with Kadesh. And what do the Mekubalim say? Kadesh goes the beginning of time. And it goes all the way to Nirtza, when Kval Yisrael becomes Ratzi in front of the Rabbeinu Shalom and Mashiach comes. So the Seder is a metaphor for the entire span of time. And you have a real speaking part, because if you break the link, that Kadesh to Nirtza doesn't happen. And you know, Baruch Hashem, you're an Erer L'Chayid, you went to Yeshiva, and you're looking at the children. And who are the four Banim? There's the Chacham. He's okay. The next one, the Rasha. Not so good. The next one is the Tam. What is the Rambam, the Yerushalmi call him? The Ben HaTipish. And who's the fourth one? The She'ene Yedei Elishal. He aspires to be a Tipish. And you look at them and you say, these are going to pass the torch on. Oh my, this is bad news. I'm giving my business, the business of Klal Yisrael, to these four Banim. I mean, three out of the four. Really bad. And what do we say? Baruch HaMakim Baruch Hu Keneged Arba Banim Divra Torah. The Rabbeinu Shalom has a makayim for every one of your children. Yes, Nistarim Darkei Hashem, they too will pass on the torch. You may not see it. The Torah talks about, we say, Yiftach b'doirei kishmol b'doirei. You've all heard that. Why Yiftach? Like, why doesn't it mention somebody else? But if you learn Navi, what does it say in the beginning of Shoftim? L'gilad noilad Yiftach hu ben isha zayna. Seems Gilad had some not so good days. And he had a son called Yiftach, who was the son of a ben isha zayna. Not a nice thing. If you've ever been cursed in Israel, you've heard those words. Not good. So what does it say? Gilad did tshuva, and he married a Beis Yaakov girl. I don't know from which Beis Yaakov. She went to seminary in Israel. Top of the line girl. And what did she do? Vayigarshu as Yiftach, they threw him out of the house, the Ben Isha Zayna. And they said, Loi sinchal bebeis elikenu. This one, he's out. He doesn't belong in Yiddishkeit, he's a Ben Isha Zayna. And it says, Vayivrach Yiftach, he runs away, mipneyachiv. Vayislaktu el Yiftach anoshim reikim. A whole group of OTD shababniks surround him. Maybe footsteps, maybe they all went to footsteps. But what happens? Bnei Amoin come, tough guys, and they do war with the Yidin, and guess what? They can't handle them. And they go to Yiftach and his group of Anashim Rekab, and they say, save us. And what does Yiftach say? You shamed me. You threw me out. You despised me. Now you want me? And what do they say? Go to war for us, and if you win, V'hayisa lanu l'roish, you will be the next melech. Not the melech, the shayfit of Klal Yisrael. And he does, and he becomes the shayfit. So what do we say? Yiftach b'dayrei, the ben isha zayna, is kishmol b'dayrei. And why is that? It's not an accident. Nistarim darkei Hashem. I'll prove it to you. Mashiach, right? The end of time, the glorious Mashiach, the Messiah, what we're waiting for. But look at his background. I would not have been mashadach with him. Mashiach, where's the first time we see him? Matsasi is David Avdi B'Sedayim. He, Lot and his daughters, incest. Could you imagine being ready shadach like that for your child? When's the next time we see him? Tamar and Yehuda. They had this child, Peretz. He thinks she's a Zayna Baderach. The next place we see Mashiach. The third time, Bayaz with a Gyeris. Would you let your child marry Gyeris? Most people would say no, no, no. Mashiach from Bayaz in Rus. A tishkav lemargaloisav. As she falls, she goes to sleep in his bed, on the foot of his bed. And where's the last time we see Mashiach? The next time we see Mashiach, she's there the last time. It says, Shmuel is sent by Kavayachal to the house of Yishai to make David Malka Mashiach. But Shmuel doesn't know which son it is. So the first one comes in, very handsome, Aliyev. He says, you are the chosen one. And Rabbi Nishalm says in his ear, no, I don't look at looks, at height. I don't look at how debonair you are, not this one. And the next one comes, no, Hashem says. Third one, beautiful. Rabbi Nishalm says, no, not this one. Seven sons, none of them. He looks at him and he says to Yishai, do you have any more children? Have you run out of sons? So he says, in the field, I have a redhead. He's very short and small. He says, bring him in. And they bring him in. And what does Rabbi Nishalm say to Shmuel? Kum Moshcheyu. Vayemer Hashem, come. This is the anointed one. Look at the circuitous way, the most difficult path. Finally, when we come to David Malka Mashicha. Light, Tamarin Yehuda, Rus, David Malka Mashicha. Nistarim Darki Hashem. And what do we say? Every yomtiv we say in Hal, Mikimi may offer a dull. David is saying about himself, I was a dull. I was admoini. I was katan. But more than that, may ashbais. Ashbais is worse than a dull. Dull is a pauper. Ashbais means a garbage dump. Why did he say garbage dump? Because when they wanted to make David melech, so Doig said, Ad shata shoyalim roi liyes melech. Before you ask if he's roi liyes melech, tishalim roi lovey bekol. Is he roi lovey bekol? Why? Because the koi asimi Rus, he comes from Rus. Rus ha moyavi, and it says la yavi amoyni mayavi bekal Hashem. And they all stood down. They didn't know what to do. Ad Shabbat, and he said, what? Kach mi kublani mi beis dinai shal Shmuel haramasi. He said, kach mi kublani de mi beis dinai shal Shmuel haramasi amoyni v'loy amoynis. So he said, Me'ashbais Yarem Evyain. They didn't want to let me buy the call. But what? I, the descendant of this very tortuous path of Yechis? Lahishivi im Nedivim. You think I'm stained? You think my past was difficult? Lahishivi im Nedivim. Who are the Nedivim? The Nedivim that Avais are called Nedivim. Nedive Yamim Nesafu, Ameleke Avram. The Avais are called the Nedivim. Just Lahishivi im Nedivim. He took his place among the Avais. Just like you say Magen Avram, we say Magen David. This is the song of David, David Malka Mashiach. So, what does the Baal Haggadah say? You're standing around the table with your family. Maybe you're disappointed in this one, and that one, and the other one. They didn't turn out. They're not turning out. What does he say? Baruch HaMakim Baruch Hu. The Rabbeinu Shalom has a place from them. You don't know what that place is. We just know, Mikimi Me'af Adol, Me'ashpais Yarem Evyoin, Lo'ishivi Im Nedivim. Go give that child who you're really struggling with a big hug and a kiss and say, Nistarim Darki Hashem, Baruch HaMakim Baruch Hu. Before we go to our guests, I'm going to ask two riddles this week, one on the Parsha and one on Pesach. Here's a fabulous riddle. B'tzal ben Uri ben Chur lamata Yehuda. So Rashi brings, Moshe said to him, make the kelim, then make the Mishkan. And B'tzal said, what? Make the kelim first? They should stay out in the rain without a house? The derech is, first you make a house, then you buy kelim. So Moshe says, wow, B'tzal kel ha'isa, you were so wise. Of course, you're right. First make the Mishkan, then make the kelim, so that they should be protected. Here's a fantastic Asha. When did all this happen? When was it all finished? Chafei Kislev. But we didn't put it together, Chafei Kislev. They waited till Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The Avis were born in Nisan. And that's when Yom HaShmini is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. What happened all these days? The Kelim and the Mishkan were unassembled, which means the Kelim were out there in the rain. So what was the whole Cheshbin of Betzalel? First you make the house, then you make the Kelim. It's academic. You didn't put up the Mishkan. The Kelim were just outside, like, regardless of what your intent was. So what is Rashi saying from Moshe said, wow, you were so brilliant. This is the first riddle, fantastic riddle. The second riddle is, the Mishnah Berurah in Tafresh Tzadik Beis of Katan Aleph says a famous thing. He brings it from the Magen Avraham. When we say on Purim, Shachianu, the Gabbai usually gives a clap. And what does he say? Remember with the Shachianu, to be yaitza all the mitzvahs hayoim, mishloach manos, matanos levyayinim, and sudas Purim. And then after this, you know, very stentorian announcement, the Baal Koira makes a bracha of Shachianu. Sarachian, by Pesach by night, by the Leila Seder, we make a Shachianu b'shas Kiddush. Why doesn't the father, who's the Gabbai in this case, give a big clap on the table? And he says, with this Shachianu, should have Kavana to be yaitz all the mitzvahs hayayim, starting from the beginning. What is it? Dalad Kaisais, Magid, Daraisa. Remember, Megillah was just Rabbanan. Here you have Dalad Kaisis, which is Rabbanan. You have the Magid, which is a Daraisa. You have Matzah, which is a Daraisa. You have Mur, which is Rabbanan. You have Afi Kaiman. You have five mitzvahs here. What happened to the announcement? Why on Purim do we say, with the Shechianu, have Kavana to all the mitzvahs hayayim? I've never seen anybody give a clap by the Seder and say, have Kavana for the mitzvahs hayayim. Those are our riddles of the week. If you get the answers to these riddles, we will bli neda send you headlines 3. I know I was waiting. It was supposed to come out Purim time. The print is a little delayed. I hope it comes out before Pesach. And we will send the riddle winners headlines 3, which we took 25 of the most interesting topics of the last 2 years, and we put them. And you know, we speak about it very quickly here on the year, but in the Sefer, it's really done be'iyun, fabulous. You could really learn it and use it by the Shabbos table with a chavrusa. If you're a rav, you could use it by the speech. They're really very well vetted and thoroughly put down. As always, if you'd like to send in a comment, 732-806-8700, and for comments, it's 2. Or you can email us info@headlinesbook.com. We do put up the comments and the letters online where readers or listeners can access them unless you request otherwise. Let's go to our guests of the week.
Joining us from Queens, New York, is Rabbi Moshe Taub. He's a Talmud of Rabbi Meir Stern, of Lahavdol ben Achaim ben Achaim, Rabbi David Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. He's a columnist in Ami. He's the Menahel in Tells Riverdale, Musmach of Lakewood. Welcome, Rabbi Taub.
Shalom Aleichem. It's a covered gadol to be here.
Thank you. So Rabbi Taub, I'm going to use the news as an example because, you know, the cases aren't that dissimilar. So I'm going to take 2 or 3 cases and tell me, if you were a Rav, how would you look at them? Judge Kavanaugh, accused by a lone female that 20-some-odd years ago, he attempted to attack her physically, you know, not for mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. Now in the news, Woody Allen is accused by his ex-wife, after a very fractious divorce, that he abused a 6-year-old. The 6-year-old testified to a psychologist. One psychologist said he is Neman, not Neman. Case number 2. Case number 3, our current governor, Mario Cuomo, I think 5 or 6 women at this point, have come out and accused him. All 3 cases, that's just so similar. And the same thing happens. We could just then take it to the Frumma world. Somebody comes out, accuses a Rav, a teacher, etc. But these are sort of very well-known cases. Let's start with Kavanaugh. What would you say?
I mean, everything you just said, there's so much to talk about. First of all, with Kavanaugh, let's talk about Kavanaugh for a moment. You know, I wanted to state for the record for those listening that I was talking to Rav Kushner, Chaver Basin in the Beis Avad in Lakewood the other day. He was picking up his father-in-law, Shlomo Miller. So I said, could you ask your father-in-law the following question? Reglaim Ladovar, or to use the words of the Maharival, who argues on the Chatam Sefer about rumors, which we could talk about in a moment, that something is muchzik bekoil. Does it apply today when we have the ease of internet? You know, there was a time that a rumor and a feeling about somebody had a lot of purchase. Today, with the ease of information, how does that work? And if Shlomo Miller responded, let me
just interrupt. And let me add on to that. The anonymity of that the internet allows.
Oh, for sure.
Where people can say the worst things under, you know, made up names. You had the case last year where the girl was bullied and hung herself, and they found that because the person who was accusing her, who was making up these things, was somebody who had taken a boy in her class's name, was an adult, and just for fun, decided to torture this girl. So the anonymity as well as the ability
to
spread.
For those who study, for those listening who studied Plato and Socrates and Greek philosophy, the ring of Gages, which makes you disappear, that you know who is truly virtuous by, if you could put on a ring, what would you do if it made you disappear? And we know that today. Who is truly virtuous? How do you act when you are anonymous? And Shlomo Miller, to go back, responded, and he said that anybody who has what to gain, it has to be dismissed. And the Post can discuss this about negios when it comes to a rumor. And we could discuss the pratim, the specifics of halacha lemaisa. I know you've written about this, and others have written about this, and certainly the Shaila v'Tshuvas have debated this issue. You know, when it comes to Kavanah, it's a very complicated case, and I just want to say for the record, as a Rav of a shul, and for other Rabbanim listening, it's a very fractured time, and this is a different topic, not the topic today, and Rabbanim getting involved in particular specific political cases can be very dangerous. The limited information that I know about Kavanaugh is that information seemed to have come from people who are Nogei Bedavar. And short of Rayos Beruros, to use the language of the Chasam Sofer in a tshuva, who takes a very strict opinion, you have to be very suspect of ruining someone's parnasa when it comes to such a situation. Now, we could apply it to our days with Rabbanim and Rebbeim, but I want to say something, if Mechilas Chavayde of Liechtenstein. I just want to say something at the outset.
But let me just interrupt again. I'm going to quote word verbatim, Ramosha in Yeridei Aleph Aleph, right?
Okay.
He writes, "We're a woman who is divorced, accused her husband, the Sheikhet, she said he smokes on Shabbos." He says, "Hanochel ani estaiti, the mitzat hakoil sheyotze medivrei ishtei shegirsha, a rumor that comes or accusation that comes from his divorced wife, ein lachush, we should not be suspect, ki yadua, it's well known, shesin asai, that the hatred that is aroused in a divorce, both sides, men or women, mefurish b'yuvam estaf chafei." So, b'kitzur, Moshe says when people have reasons, a vested interest, like in a divorce, to say something, or in a political thing, I mean, the political, either on the right or on the left, they're so distorted and twisted. I'm just giving you, you know,
I can tell you a Moshe that proves this point of our Moshe. I was sitting once by Shalosh Shudas. I used to be a Rav in Buffalo, and they had the head of the Judaic Studies program. You know, it's not a secret that in academia people are far to the left, and I loved them. And that was at a time, 10 years ago, that we could all get along and debate and discuss and kiss each other and hug at the end of the discussion. So by Shalosh Shudas, he sits down next to me, and he says that, you know, Bush supporters are of low college graduation rates. So I said, it's so interesting you say that, because the Wall Street Journal came out that most people who have a postgraduate degree voted for Bush. And then he immediately switched his mind and he goes, yeah, you know that, you know why? Because they live in the ivory tower and they don't know the real world. I said, do you realize what you just did? How the power of Negius we just saw right at hand, whatever your politics are. And we're all like this, right and left. And whether it's Ramesha or Rabban who've dealt with Gittin, they're very well aware of this. And it's something, you know, today, I don't know if it's something you want to broach, but I don't have Facebook. I don't have Instagram, Baruch Hashem. I don't have any of these things. But I have children, and they share with me what's going on in the world. And there's a big push today on social media programs about agunos, and stories are being told. Now, it could be these people are Rishayim Gemurim, but I tell my daughters that you have to be very careful that when you hear information from someone who's Nogeya B'davar, it's a halacha. I mean, Chafetz Chaim discusses this. In Sefer Chafetz Chaim itself, you have to be very careful what you accept as emes la'amitai. That being said, the Rambam writes, Shulchan Aruch discusses this when it comes to chinuch, that a Rav and a Mechanech, and a Gabbai Tzedakah for that matter, in Yerodeya, the Shulchan Aruch spent a lot of time discussing even a Gabbai Tzedakah has to be beyond reproach. Myself personally, about 8 years ago, my president of my shul came over to me to sign a document. So I said, what am I signing? He said, it's insurance. I said, could I read it? He goes, yeah, take the afternoon and read it. And I read through the document, and it's insurance for the shul for her Rav, who was accused of inappropriate behavior. And ever since that time, I don't even meet with a man, let alone a woman. I never meet with a man alone in the shul unless another person is in the shul at the same time. A Rav and a Rebbe, and, you know, even husbands who are listening, your actions have to be beyond reproach. So I think there's something to be said on both sides, for the hamainam, the haipaloi, what they believe in getting involved in, and as well as for the individuals themselves, we all have to act in a very appropriate manner. You know, Rabbi Lichtenstein, if I could just share a very brief story that I think will blow the listeners away. And I don't know if the story is a davar yadua, but the Magid of Yerushalayim, he used to say over the story of Shadron, and I'll say it very quickly in 60 seconds or less. There was a sheikhet in Yerushalayim in the turn of the century. He was very poor. He had a coin that could save his family and provide 6 months of food. And he saved it on top of his dresser. One day he comes home, his kid is sitting there with licorice, v'chol mine mata'amim, and he says to his kid, where'd you get the money to buy this? He said, I found a coin on the dresser. So he said, what do you do with the coin? You went to who? He said, I went to the Chanvani, I went to the store owner, the candy store. So he runs to the candy store, the Sheikhet, and he says, my son gave you this expensive coin. He says, he gave me a cheap ruble. So he took him to the Din Torah, and he made him make a shvua. He made a shvua, I didn't take any such coin. And people in Yerushalayim were furious. They stopped supporting the store, and he lost everything. His kids couldn't find shaduchim. He moved away. He went back to the old country, went back to Europe, and that was the end of the maisa. About 20 years later, the sheikh gets a letter in the mail from at that point, Balabas. He says, I was a bachur in Yerushalayim. 20 years ago, I was walking down the street and I saw your son flipping this expensive coin, and I figured there must be a lot more where it came from, and I said, could I see it? And I did a little magic trick and I gave him back a ruble, and then he went to the candy store with the ruble. Here's the money that I owe you. So Shadron would say over the story, and he would say, let's take a tour of heaven and hell. Who's in heaven? I mean, the Chanvani, the store owner, Shein Gahat, he already had his hell in his belt. He was accused inappropriately. Shimon, the Sheikhet, he did everything appropriately. He went to What more do you want from him? The Ganif asked for Mechila. The only people in hell are the Bnei Ha'ir, the people who had nothing to do with the story, who destroyed lives. We all have to be very, very careful about getting involved, especially when we don't have direct evidence.
Let me be myself to what Rav is saying, that it says Vayikach Koirach, that's the parsha of Machlokes by Klal Yisrael. But what happens? Dasan Vaviram, everybody gets swallowed by the earth. The only ones who survive are the children of Korach. And I think that it's like Rav Shalom Shadron said, he was upset he lost the money. He was upset his reputation was damaged. Who's guilty? The people on the sidelines who had nothing to do with it, who bushkev it and shushkev it about it, right? Korach had a genuine, what he thought was a complaint against Moshe Rabbeinu. Why am I being pushed to the bottom of the heap? Everybody. So his son survived. You know who didn't survive? The people who mixed in, who had absolutely no reason to mix in, they all disappeared. They were nenas more than Korach, right? I'm just bringing a raya
to
what you're saying.
So, I want the listener to know, in case they think they're listening to a Rav who always is supporting the husband or the Rebbe who's accused or the Rav who's accused, it's quite the opposite. But Rabbanim are so well aware, and they know more stories, not less stories. They have more information than the people who are following these events. And they're aware, and it's not safe to say. It's not safe for me to say. I hope I don't regret saying this. They know the stories that are true, whether it be about agunos, whether it be about sexual abuse, whether it be about verbal abuse, which to my mind is very close second to sexual abuse, that are true. But they also know these are atom bombs that could be used in a negotiation. And it's extremely dangerous for people to be naive and not trust that there's a deeper side to the story. Now, we could discuss the halacha lemaisa, but that's just generally speaking.
So let's
that
go back.
Rabbanim A should be careful, and people in Kukaita should be careful, and husbands should be careful. But people, like you said from Korach, people on the outside should be very careful before they get involved.
So let's go back to our three cases. Kavanaugh, how much do you suspect that this woman is political and therefore was a megeya and et cetera?
I mean, I don't want to recommend books. Yeah, I would recommend the listener read Molly Hemingway's book on the topic. I wasn't expecting that question, but just derech agav, just getting the actual information. But in such a case, like Ramesha writes, like you quoted, like Flame Miller said, like I quoted, someone who's negeiv a davar, which in that case was clear. And by the way, if the politics were reversed, I would say the same thing. We have to be very hesitant to accept it. You know, Reagan had a line that the Chafetz Chaim echoed years earlier, trust but verify. You know, you could be cheshesh, not necessarily.
Kabdeyu v'cheshdeyu.
That's exactly right.
Now, so what would you say? Now let's go to the case of Mia Farrow.
You know, Mia Farrow is an interesting case. I'm not going to admit that I know who these people are, but I guess I have to. You know, this was a very difficult situation. Woody Allen, I don't think it's a chiddush to say, and that's a shtickle in the novel. I mean, who we ended up marrying. You could imagine the pain and the
humiliation
that it will bring upon his wife, Miss Farrow, and the anger that would bring. It's very strange. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the New York Times, I think they deleted it from their website, but the new conservative reporter, whose name is escaping me, I've had dinner with him a few times. Maybe you could remember his name. He came from the Wall Street Journal. But anyway, he wrote an op-ed.
Stephen.
A few years ago. What's his name?
Was this Brett Stephen?
Brett Stevens, that's exactly right. So Brett Stevens wrote this article where he said, if Woody Allen is guilty, it would be one of the strangest cases, because people who have this disease, this sickness, there's no word for it, of pedophilia, don't commit a crime just once.
Yeah, that's the issue, yeah.
But more importantly, it's
30 years later.
The listener something very important. Whether it's Gittin, whether it's sexual abuse, or whether it's a shayla in the kitchen, one of the reasons you call a rav is because of the idiyas ha-taira. That's very nice. But there's another reason that you call a rav, and that's to have an objective view. Having someone who is objective is vital in every case that is serious in our lives. It's so important, and that means politically objective, that means emotionally objective, familiarly objective, and by the way, that applies to Rabbanim too. The Chassam Sofer in the Medrash in this week's Parsha, the one of the most famous Midrashim in last week's Parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Yidden were offering an Egel HaZahav, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes to see it for himself, and the Medrash says, but you have Eidus from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Medrash explains, but he's a rav. And a Rav defends his Kehila no matter what. And a Rav is going to defend his Bala, and he should defend his Bala about them. Just like, by O.J. Simpson, his lawyers defended him. Everybody needs defense attorney. But that being said, every person is required to find someone objective and to listen to that objective person very carefully, both the Hamainam and those that are involved in the case.
But Rabbi Tal, here's my question. You know, to become a Rav, you have to have smicha on Yeredeya. I think it's from, like, what is it, Pei Zayin through Kuf Yud Aleph or something?
You have about eight choices. In my day, you had eight choices, but yeah.
Okay, which means you know how to, check eggs all the way through, some pots and pans, Shiloh, right? You know, now we're making him an expert on, sexual abuse, listening to two sides, There are people who go to school for that for a decade. I mean, when you say go to a Rav and get an objective opinion, I can promise you, everybody, I give Adis, it's not between Pei Zayin and Kuf Yud Aleph in Yeredeya. Trust me.
I want to tell you something. I'm so happy you said that. Because I don't think I said necessarily a Rav, an objective view, but I want to comment on what you just said. And I want to rub on them. And again, Mechilas Kveitchem, Mi'ani Ani Hakotan, but I want to say something very important to the rabbis listening, whether they have a 3-year degree in Rabbanus or they spent their whole life on Rabbanus. A Rav, just, there's a concept of a Peter principle. Just because an issue comes across a Rav's desk does not make a Rav an expert. And especially today, Chachma Begayim Tamim, one of the greatest problems in Rabbanus today, in my opinion, is counseling. First of all, scandals that come from counseling. Why is a Rav counseling a woman going through a get? You want to let her know that you and your wife are there to cook her meals and invite her over. And if she wants to come to your office once in a blue moon to cry a little bit, das ist einsach. But a Rav counseling a woman who's emotionally susceptible and vulnerable, I think it's completely inappropriate. A Rav is not a counselor. He doesn't have a degree in that issue. And inapitrapus la'arayis. Hamevin Yovin. Rabbanim have to be very careful taking advantage of their position and of their Yetzirah. Nobody is a malach, and I am very cynical towards Rabbanim who do not have a degree offering counseling. If someone comes to you and they're depressed, you have a Rolodex, to use an old term, and you give them a psychiatrist a psychologist or a therapist. Someone who's having marriage issues, you could speak to them, of course, as a Rav, to explain the halachic implications and hashkafas haTorah. But that's only in concert with a professional marriage counselor who meets you with people with tznius, who knows the law of the land. It is extraordinarily irresponsible for Rabbanim to believe that just because something crosses their desk makes the owner of that desk an expert in that issue. And it's somewhat of a battle cry of mine. I tell younger Rabbanim the same thing.
Yeah, and I just would like to add on to Vart, like it's this week's Parsha, but it's a Bria HaTichon of a lot of what you're saying is, this week's Parsha is Vayakel Pikudei, Ela Pikudei Mishkan. It goes through accounting, what he did with the silver, what he did with the gold, what he did. So Chazal asked, like, you know, the Masechtas Yevamos is 2 psukim. We need like 50 psukim to know what Moshe did with it. And not only that, Moshe Reim b'chol beisi nemanhu. So Chazal say the Klal Yisrael had a chshad. Maybe Moshe took some of the money for himself. Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Isha Lekim. The Maral says the reason he stuttered, he says, is because speech is something from this world. When somebody lives in another universe, the speech, his tongue was disconnected. So this person, you think, and he was wealthy beyond anybody from the Psalacha, from the Psalus of the Luchas, he should be suspected? So Chazal say yes, and that's why he gave Eila Pikudi Mishkan. He gave an accounting for every pruta. So if Moshe Rabbeinu could be suspected, I mean, besides Tzedakis, you know, you have Tzedakis today in the papers. If you give $18 or $118, you're going to have a shidduch. If you don't give it, you're going to get hit by a truck. All these anonymous tzedakis, which are based mamish mreivid and magnevis, right? But if Moshe could be suspected, like you're saying, how does a rav sit with a woman be yechidus and gevetus, besides shilus of yichud and the sakana he puts his family in? And I couldn't agree with you more. And my
rayon's
from Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Shalakim, I have to worry about it.
If I could respond in 2 ways, Gavaldiga Vertlach, but 2 things. First of all, it's so true what you're saying, and Rabbonim, as we said 100 times, that could be beyond repute, and more importantly, you know, a Rav has to know that they're not an expert in. But I want to say, I think there's something else, another Nakuda that you touched upon. I forget the exact number. I once did a Cheshvan, what is it, 1,776 couldn't be accounted for by Moshe Rabbeinu, and I once did a search. There's only one pasuk in the Torah that has that exact same gematria, and that's Vayifen Koy V'Koy, when Moshe Rabbeinu looked in all directions and he buried under the ground information to Oisei Mitzri. And I think, again, for the listeners and for the Rabbanim, when to be transparent and when to keep things private is very difficult, especially in cases of divorce and abuse that a Rav can't share everything. It's very frustrating as a Rav. I mean, I've been involved in a case, a particular case, about 5 years ago, where people thought that I was making a huge mistake and I couldn't reveal information that I had because it would have destroyed the woman involved. I couldn't say it. And the Rav has to be willing to take that heat. And there's always that tension between you want to be as transparent as possible, Moshe Rabbeinu revealing the funds, but you also have to know when has to be buried underground. And the Shulchan Aruch discusses this. It's machlokes of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, no, by Hilchos Tzedakah. I want to mention, my brother wrote the book for Art School, Hilchos Tzedakah, everybody should buy it, The Laws of Tzedakah and Meister by my brother. But in any event, by Hilchos Tzedakah, the Shulchan Aruch says that a Gabay Tzedakah is not mechuyev, not only is not mechuyev, you shouldn't ask him for an accounting of the money. But the Ramah disagrees. It's not so pashut.
And the Bir Agra on that halacha, I think it's Reish Mem Vav in Yeridah,
right,
brings the Medrash of Pikudei about Moshe Rabbeinu, brings the Mekoyer, the Bir Agra brings the Mekoyer to the Ramah from this Medrash that Moshe had to give an accounting.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't even know that Bir Agra.
Yeah.
It was good. I had to do this podcast just to hear that.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. So let's continue. Mario Cuomo, not Mario, the new Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, I guess.
Right.
Whatever. Governor
Chris is the brother.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo, 5 women have come forth. Do you believe them or not?
I mean, I'm not there. I'm not an aide. I mean, based on some. I mean, listen, I again, for the list, I'm going to respond to your good question. I want to tell the listeners that The Marivayel discusses the concept of a kol muchzuk. A rumor could be somewhat accepted. The Chasam Sofer and Chafetz Chaim are much more reluctant. You need some type of bir hadavar. But pushing all that aside, two things. Number one is, again, let's go back to the Ramesh that you quoted. Governor Cuomo was involved in a scandal that killed people in nursing homes. My wife works in nursing homes. My family works in nursing homes. I'm very suspect of all of a sudden the media, who ignored that for 6 months, is all of a sudden embracing this. It seems a little bit like a cop-out. Is it true or is it not true? I mean, L'chaira has reglaim l'davar, L'chaira. Is the question, what in particular is the question? Even if it's true, it seems like he's a manuvel. It doesn't seem like he went against any crime. A manuvel, not... It wouldn't be the first time we had a manuvel in office. You know, he's a single man, not married, and he's a manuvel. You know, Nebuch, he's walking in the dark without Torah. But I think there's, again, using pikhus, I get whether you're on the right or the left, what is being gained by all of a sudden, where did this come from? Six women have accused him. Why all of a sudden? I think there's a much greater scandal that we should be focusing on, which is not the topic today, which is Gramisa. But that being said, I think, you know, for those on the right, you have to be suspect as well.
So let me ask you a question, a sensitive question. All the accusers, by the way, in all three of the cases we mentioned, were Nashim. Nashim Apostle Edis. So is that a reason not to believe them?
The Pesim discussed this, Eliezer, many people have chuvas, that this is something that a Rav or a Beis Din could take into account in certain cases, such edus. Is that a din edus d'araisa? You know, the lumdus of it is a different discussion. But certainly there is a nemanus for Nashim, and there's even a nemanus for children in certain cases.
Yeah, well, I think it's a mechaba in Lamed Hay, in Hilchos Edus, that it's also takonas hakedmoidim, he says. You're allowed to believe a katan, or an isha. And I believe that the Ramah brings a makayr, but he says, why? Because he says, like, let's face it, where somebody's accused of molestation, he ain't going to find no Edom around.
Who else is
he ain't doing it with his Edom. Yeah. So,
you know, I'll tell you something. Something I don't know what to do with, and it's something maybe you want to, you of all people, maybe could figure out in all of your extensive writing and your podcast. Today, you know, Rabbi Yashiv wrote this letter, and I'm sure many listeners know of this letter. And it's, you do a Gemara where when a government, when halacha doesn't have a way of dealing with something, then there are times that we surrender to the culture and the government and the law of the time. And Rabbi Yashiv discusses this when it comes to sexual abuse.
It's a tour in Shin Pei Ches brings it from a Chuvas HaRashba.
Oh, so the Rashba, Hakapat, yeah. Like, it says, like, Haraya. So the shaila I have is, and everybody was embracing this 6 years ago, as they should be, because Lamaisa, we don't have a way of dealing with it. We're in Golus, we don't have a Sanhedrin, so we have to surrender to the Chochmas Hagayim. My kasha is, at what point does the pendulum swing to the point of silliness? Now, when I say silliness, I mean there are people who are losing their jobs for not even chatayim in for the Mesilta Yesharim. And at what point do we say that you still could surrender to the culture of the time? I think we're heading into very murky waters. But suffice it to say, when it comes to Governor Cuomo, when it comes to issues in Bnei Yisrael, I think all Rabbanim would agree that we don't have the means to deal with it. You have to tell the police, you have to tell the authorities, and if you only suspect it, you have to be very clear. I would advise, you know, when Aguda came out and said you should speak to a Rav, I couldn't agree more because of the objective element. You want to speak to someone objective before you call the police, make sure that you have your ducks in a row, and call the police. My Haggah footnote to this is, based on this Chuvas HaRashba, how wide does this go? You know, if someone supports Trump today, whatever your politics are, they could be fired if they write that on Twitter or what have you. You know, is that something that we have to take into account based on the Chuvas HaRashba? But when it comes to Governor Cuomo, when it comes to all the cases you mentioned, I think that the Chuvas HaRashba applies.
By the way, and the Rashba has the most startling lushin. It's one of the most unique lushinis I could say I've ever seen brought anywhere. He says, if you mimed everything al din Torah, Imagine this, if you would be maimed everything and in Torah, he says, Nimtza oilam chashav, a charav, he says. The world would get destroyed if we would do things according to the Torah literally. And he says, I think he says, that's what it says, Yushalayim lo nechrava, elabishvol shehemidu divrayim al din Torah. Whereas the Rashba is saying, you have to use your common sense sometime, and if a child says he's molested, and then another child comes, like there's not going to be any Edom around, it's just absurd,
right?
My wife
always tells me this, when we get into arguments about Ashkafa, my wife is much smarter than I am, and we always get into discussions about the Haguna issue and other issues, and I bring this Raya and that Raya, and she said, enough with the Rayas, Seichel HaYosha, which is very important.
Okay, Rabbi, is there anything that I haven't, a question that I should have asked and I didn't?
I have to repeat, you know, I actually, before I came on, I wrote down about 2 pages of notes, and I didn't get to any of the things I wanted to discuss, but one thing that I just want to mention again to the Rabbanim, and to those that are in Kli Kodesh, and those that are Rebbeim, let's not wait to the moment of accusation to then go back and defend ourselves. We have to be, I'll tell you a quick maysa, 30 seconds. When I was building an Erev, when I lived in Buffalo, I brought in a paisik, and we were spending the whole day together. And he tells me a maysa, he was sitting in a shul in Muncie, chash of a shul, and the Rav gets up, it's like 20 years ago, the Rav gets up, it's also to have a television. The whole drusha, it's also to have a television. These were the days that television was the only way to watch movies. And he said to himself, I don't understand, the Rav knows, I know every balabas in the shul, every balabas in the shul has a television. There's no risk of walking down the streets of Muncie by force. Matzei Shabbos, and televisions are going to be thrown out the window, or you're going to get hit. So the Rav knows that, and the Balabatim know that the Rav knows that, and the Rav knows that the Balabatim know that the Rav knows, and the Rav knows that the Balabatim know that the Rav knows. What's the point of this game? And he said such a beautiful word to me. He said that there's a Yetzer Hara and a Yetzer HaTais. We have an internal Yetzer Hara and an external Yetzer Hara. There's our lusts and desires inside our hearts, and the lusts and desires that live out in the street that meet us when we go to work, that when we go drive a car, when we go on vacation. And then there's the Yetzer Taiv. But the Yetzer Taiv only lives internally. So it's not a fair battle. There's no external Yetzer Tov. So explained this Rav, who was working on the Erev in Buffalo, he said, must be that a Rav's job is to counterbalance. There's an external Yetzer Hara and an internal Yetzer Hara. An internal Yetzer Tov. The Rav's job is to be the external Yetzer Tov, to say what he believes to be MS, no matter what. And Rabbanim who are listening, and Rebbeim who are listening, and the people in Chinuch who are listening, to act as the external Yetzer Tov, and I've learned from all of you, so Chalila, am I giving Musar? But I'm just reminding myself that we all have to be external Yetzer Tov, be beyond repute. Never put ourselves in a situation that we have to defend ourselves in. Never, ever meet with anybody with no one else in the building. Even a couple. You should be so machmir, because the Chilul Hashem, as the Paiskim discuss, when it comes to rehiring Rabbanim involved in scandals and Rebbeim, the Chilul Hashem involved is horrible. And even, by the way, I would say, when it comes to Aguna cases that are now becoming so in the vogue, there has to be a way that we could speak to the Rabbim, that we could be an external Yetzer Tov to show that everything is being done on the up and up. We have to be the external Yetzer Tov.
Would you suggest, Rabbi Tal, that Rabbanim have in their studies maybe a camera? So cheap today.
It's a very good question. The problem that you have is, depending on the state they live in, there are different laws in different states. I'm a big fan of recording.
I think for recording there's a problem, but for video there's no problem.
So if that's the case, I think when I was in Buffalo, I'll tell you a quick story. I'm sorry for taking so long, but when I was in Buffalo, I had $5,000 stolen from my office. It was before Purim. My son of Yanim cash was sitting there. $5,000 were stolen. So I told my president, let's have a motion sensor camera. So for my tenure, for the rest of my tenure in Western New York, I had a camera in my office. And I have to tell you, the menuchas hanefesh I had, other than money, that there was a camera motion censored of everything that went on my office, made me sleep very well. Well, at night. I haven't thought about that in 7 years, so I think it's a very good idea you're mentioning.
Well, thank you very much, and a chakash of a sameach.
Continued hatzlacha on your avodas hakodesh. Thank you for having me.
Kol tov, Rabbi Tal. Bye bye. Joining us from Brooklyn is Rabbi Yochanan Dunn. He's a Talmud of the Stalin Yeshiva, Tiferes Ali Melech, but Stalin, like from ninth grade all the way through Beis Medrash. For 13 years, he was a columnist in Hamadia. Today, he's a columnist in both Mishpacha and Yated, certainly an expert on local politics. Welcome, Rabbi Yochanan.
Hello, Herr David. A pleasure being here with you.
So as somebody who really knows his way around the political arena of New York, Governor Cuomo has been accused of sexual impropriety. I think it's 5 or 6 women at this point. Somebody probably met the governor on many occasions. What's your hargasha about this?
Well, my hargasha, first of all, I would say I met him a couple of times. I think I met him twice in my life, both at press conferences. But my hargasha, just as my feeling about this is that, you know, this is not my hargasha. This is Albany. This is the way, you know, since Cuomo became governor 10 years ago, this is the way Albany has been run. Cuomo is iron-fisted. He is extremely retaliatory. Everybody from the mayor of New York City down to a county clerk in Erie County or anywhere, in some small county, Erie's not obviously a small county, down to organizations, you know, even the Hamish organizations. This is the way Cuomo runs things. You say one nice thing about him and you get a personal call. You know, I myself have gotten calls from members of his staff when I wrote things that they didn't like. And, you know, this is Cuomo. So, you know, do I believe all these allegations? I have no doubt not to believe it. You know, this is not, he's not a Hoshe Bacharian. This is somebody that is known to do these type of things.
There's your testimony is really about him being vengeful, iron-fisted, but yet you say impropriety like this would be, is reasonable to assume, you said, because he's not a kosher.
Actually, I would say about 2 separate things. What first sparked this whole thing that called on him, yeah, that was not out of the ordinary. That was referring to that. About these allegations, specific allegations, you know, in halacha, there's a thing, you know, and also in the secular law, you know, innocent until proven guilty. I think that Cuomo, you know, has set himself up for the past few years as sort of like the head of the mob. Whenever anybody's accused of one of these types of things, Eric Schneiderman is somebody that's used many times, including yesterday at his press conference. He has set himself up as the head of the mob, protecting women, believing the accusers. So according to his understanding of the way these things would work, he would have to resign. But if you look at the law, then he should be allowed. It's a mere allegation. You know, there's no concrete evidence that he actually did these type of things. So he, you know, obviously should be given the benefit of the doubt, wait till the report comes out. But from what I'm hearing from people who know him, you know, I've asked them, do you believe these things? And they all tell me it was an open secret. So I'm expecting the report to, you know, to cause him a lot of damage. And when he's saying, wait for the report, and then we'll decide, I'm expecting the report to be very damaging to him. And he'll have a very hard time explaining then why he's not resigning. On the other hand, the big thing people are saying...
Your point is, given his attitude towards other cases like this, he's being hoisted on his own petard.
Exactly. Great expression. Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you in general. If this had been a Rav, well, you had this fellow Rabbi Berland in Israel. Many accusations. I think he was even convicted of sexual impropriety. Would you look at it the same way?
Would we look at it the same way? Well, I would just note, you mentioned Rabbi Berland. I hesitate, you know, to mention specific things, but that was a single case. That was, you know, we're not talking about, with Cuomo, you're already up to woman number 6. And I am constantly hearing of more women are planning on coming forward. So I would just, you know, note that difference. But all Hamish media have this, this is something, when I was in Amidia, now I'm in Mishpachan Yatet. Obviously, I don't speak for them, but we do have this cloud that we cannot write about. Anyone who's a Shemba Shabbos, anyone who goes under the spectrum of Hilchos Lashon Hara, we don't write about them. So you don't have to promote them. In other words, I don't think you'll find any newspaper writing about anybody with a whiff of scandal about them. But according to Hilchos Lashon Hara, we were told we're not allowed to write about them.
So, Rabbi Yechanan, would we agree that keeping quiet about molesters is not a good thing for our community?
I would say that 2 things. You know, newspapers are not muckrakers in the Orthodox community, in the Hamish community. We are not there to, you know, to expel people from the community. We're not there. We're here to provide nice entertainment for family, you know, things that I would feel comfortable with my kids reading, people will feel comfortable bringing into the house, and that's it. We're not,
I think there's a big line between muckraking and speaking about people who are actual known as raglayim ladavar, beyond a doubt, to be threats to our community. Do you think that newspapers have any obligation to protect our community?
What I'm saying is that there are enough mediums without our newspapers. There's no reason to taint the newspapers with these type of things.
When you say there are enough mediums, I mean, somebody reading the Etzed, we assume, is not reading the Times, is not on social media. Honestly, I've never been on social media practically in my life, and I do read the Times. And they do look to you for their information. And the proof is things that, you know, you would say, hey, like, why are they writing about that the ambassador was chosen? I mean, who doesn't know the ambassador was chosen? And the answer is a lot of people don't know the ambassador was chosen if they don't read it in the Etzed and Hamodia. So don't you think, I mean, do you see when you write about, let's say, if you would write about Governor Cuomo's actions towards the Jewish community, which clearly have been, you know, inappropriate, to put it kindly, right? When you write about it, don't you feel like you were sort of protecting our community? And if so, why wouldn't it extend to child molesters or people who, a Rav who, or any individual, why choose Rabbanim? It could be a businessman who's molesting. I love Rabbanim. But I'm thinking, isn't it the job to protect the community? I mean, certainly when you open up the paper, you get that feeling.
Right. So you mentioned Rabbanim before. Rabbanim, you know, if a Rav is accused of these type of things, credibly accused, it tends to, you know, attract attention. People hear about it. I don't think that's the job of the Hamish media to, you know, to add wings to that.
Whose job is it to protect our community? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So let me just finish that thought. So when it comes to regular people, we do those type of things. Now, you know, like Mishpacha is not a news magazine. Mishpacha is more fiction, you know, but when I was in Hamidia, I regularly wrote articles about whenever there was abuse going on, you know, we wrote about it in a delicate way, in a family-sensitive way, but we did write about it in a way that people should know to be careful. So I think we satisfied our obligations in that area. It's just that the Rabbanim, you know, there's a Shulchan Aruch, we consult with our Rabbanim, and whatever the psak is, that's what we follow.
I'm all for that. I'm also following the Shulchan Aruch. I just think, well, I agree with that. But, you know, certainly, you know, molesters come in many different forms and shapes. They could be, usually it's family members, unfortunately, or people they knew. But it also could be, among the many, it could be Rabbanim too. So
right.
you would think they would want to protect the community from anybody. I mean, and Rabbanim are probably the miyuta, because most of them have very high moral standards, and they do it with great mesiras nefesh. But I would hope that no matter who it is, if somebody is abusing other people, that our newspapers or our press would protect us.
Right. There should be, and there is medium class to protect people. But I would just say, you know, you're talking about Rabbanim, right?
I don't want to talk about Rabbanim, because it's such a miyut where it's Rabbanim. I mean, if you would look at molestation, it's such a miyut.
Right.
You do have teachers, unfortunately. We have the cocoa
case. Right. I was just getting to that.
But it's not Rabbanim for the most part, right?
Right. So I was just saying that, you know, that when you refer to Rabbanim, you're probably referring to, you know, you mentioned Rabbi Berman before. That was not a case of molestation. That was obviously, you know, that was sort of a case like what one was accused of, you know, preying on followers, people who look up to him, you know, for that thing. But when it comes to molestation, which is a totally separate thing, you know, there are ways, you know, the community is a lot more educated now than there was 30 years ago about these type of things. I've spoken to yeshiva administrators, and they tell me this. You know, 30, 40 years ago, they did not know that a molester was somebody that had to be expelled from the community, you know. Then they thought, you know, send him to therapy, they'll be able to help him. Today, it's different. Today, you know, anybody who's molested is expelled from a shul, expelled from this community. They're not protected in any way. People are made to be known. People are made aware of the fact that this person is a molester, and people should stay away.
Okay. So I'm just saying, what we see with Cuomo You know, I see that a tiny bit of it, because I Yisrael Kedoshim, I mean, we do have in our community, and I would hope that, you know, we want to protect the community. That's, you know, I know people who committed suicide because they were molested. I had a boy by my table, Shabbos, who spoke about it, and a year later committed suicide. So
yes. We had an article in Mishpacha this week by Shana Friedman, the managing editor of Mishpacha. It spoke about this, you know, we're not a perfect community. We do have, you know, but you have to be a member of the community to appreciate, you know, how minute that is.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for your time, Rabbi Yochanan.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a pleasure talking to you.
Kol tov, Rabbi.
Okay. Kol tov.
Joining us from New Jersey is Keshet Star. She's the CEO of ORA, Organization for the Resolution of Agunot. Welcome, Keshet.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Good. So you deal a lot with claim, counterclaim, you know, divorce, Aguna, which is the saddest of things. I want to talk about Mario Cuomo. 5 or 6 women have come forth and accused him. In your experience, like, what accusations should be taken seriously? We have men who say, you know, women make things up. We have, you know, women who say men make things up. Is there any rule to this? Give us some of your, share your experience with us.
It's such a good question and such an important one. On one hand, where there's smoke, there's fire. But on the other hand, I'm a lawyer, and I do believe in process. I think that when we lose process, we don't get a fair result in the end. So really, the way that we approach things at ORA, we work on contentious divorces. We are always caught in the middle of a lot of he said, she said. And our approach very much is trying to look at objective markers as much as we possibly can, at documentation, at really trying to sort out an objective story as opposed to just getting caught in what every person is saying.
Could you define for us what objective markers means?
So when it comes to our work, we really look at the base in history. The way we work at ORA is that we work with the rabbinic process. So we have our post-skim, we have a rabbinic team that guide us, and we actually ask for permission for every single case that we publicize, which might sound like overkill, but for us, it's such a responsibility to be publicizing a situation and embarrassing someone that we want that green light that it's the right thing to do and we're doing it for the right purpose. So for us, we look at that base in history, and we really stick to that. If you look at our materials, what we publicize, it's very focused. We're saying, this person is not giving a get. We're not addressing child support, the house, the kids, their haircut, none of that stuff. We really focus on the issue as opposed to making it a character assassination.
But I want to go back to, how do you know when somebody's telling the truth? Let's go back to Cuomo, Kavanaugh. Like, take Judge Kavanaugh as an example. Is there anything in your experience that would give you, like, you should or shouldn't believe the woman?
It's a great question. We generally have the model, and I think anyone working with victims of abuse, we always want to go in believing people. We don't want people to feel that they're on trial. At the same time, I find that because I do this professionally, I hear so many stories that I can often tell if a story's off. If, you know, 2 + 2 = 6, it's not quite making sense, and I usually know where I need to dig and fill in a little more information.
So I take the Kavanaugh, which I'm sure you read about heavily. What was your
Absolutely.
Feeling? What was your feeling about that?
My personal feeling was that, to some extent, where there's smoke, there's fire. That was my personal instinct as someone watching it. And I also think that when it comes to judicial leadership in particularly, we're looking for maybe a higher level of ethical behavior than we would expect out of everyone in the community, even for something that happened some time ago. So that's sort of my personal outlook. But I also feel like I take evidence seriously. And if I'm not evaluating all the information, I'm not looking at all the papers, I try to be aware of what I know and what I don't know, while also trying to create a culture where people feel safe and where we take abuse seriously.
But let's go back. When you say there's smoke, there's fire, I mean, does one person's accusation, you know, she said, he said, create smoke? Like, is that enough to say, oh, wow, there's smoke here? Or would you say you would need multiple accusations to do that?
Definitely multiple accusations is much more powerful. I do find, though, that in the areas I know more, A lot of abusers work the same way. So you really see a commonality and a consistency in the way that things develop, which helps you kind of know what box to put it in. So I imagine that when it comes to issues more related to sexual assault, people who do this professionally also have that sense of this is how the story usually goes.
But isn't it true that abusers rarely stop with one person?
Absolutely.
Like, so for example, even with Mario Cuomo, you know, all six stories are starting to sound remarkably alike, right?
Right.
But when, just to use in the news, both the Kavanaugh and in the Mia Farrow case, which both are in the news, or weren't in Kavanaugh last year, Farrow this year, it's like somebody did something sexually hideous once and then they never did it again. Doesn't that ring a little like, doesn't fit with the pattern? Usually there's a pattern, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, and we see that with domestic abuse as well. It's very pattern-oriented, and often people will pick out one piece, but that's missing the full story.
So my question then is, you said that you sort of believe the woman who accused Kavanaugh. Wouldn't, if Kavanaugh was really guilty, wouldn't there be a pattern as opposed to one lone woman showing up 25 years later? I mean, he had a lot of chances to do other things in the last 25 years. Like, when you think of Cuomo's accusers, I think four of them are in the last 24 months, you know?
Absolutely. There are also a lot of costs to speaking out, though. And I think that's why that community awareness and education work is so important, because if people don't feel comfortable saying what happened to them because the cost is too high, that also impacts the amount of reports that you get.
I agree with that, but should we take one person's accusation where it hasn't been repeated or there's no evidence over decades, should we look at it a little askance and saying, look, the concept of pattern is missing here, and that doesn't usually fit?
I would say, and this is the lawyer in me, that to some extent it depends on the evidence and sort of the strength of the narrative and that bigger picture.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time, Kesha.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. From Fairlawn, New Jersey, Rabbi Menachem Rosenfeld. He's a family mediator. He's a musmach of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. He has both a law degree and two education degrees. Wow. Welcome, Rabbi Rosenfeld.
Thank you very much. Thank you for welcoming me to your program.
So, for starters, we have a lot in the media today about different accusations. We have Andrew Cuomo, Mia Farrow, Judge Kavanaugh. As an expert mediator, give us your take on each three of these cases. Do you believe it? Don't you believe it? Et cetera.
Okay. I will answer the question by quoting something that was said at the Shloshim of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein a number of years ago. One of his students related that he once had asked his Rebbe, Rav Lichtenstein, you have a degree in English literature in addition to having learned over many, many years. Was that degree useful? And Rav Lichtenstein had answered, it was useful for two things. I learned that life is not simple. Life is complex, and I learned that people are not simple, people are complex. And my answer is, in all these situations, I follow with interest what has been said, charge and countercharge. It's sometimes very difficult to determine who is telling the truth and who is not, because often, I believe, people will indicate that they have a memory of events in a particular way, and they absolutely will deny something occurred, and I'm referring to the situation with Judge Kavanaugh specifically. With regard to Judge Kavanaugh, we're talking about an event that occurred many, many years ago. The accuser has a recollection of the events. Her recollection is obviously inconsistent with that of Judge Kavanaugh. I do not disbelieve the accuser. By the same token, I believe that Judge Kavanaugh is convinced that he is telling the truth as well. Sometimes we repress certain memories of events. We interpret them in a way that's favorable to us. Very difficult because of the passage of time to determine who is telling the truth. Now, with regard to Governor Cuomo...
Wait, but can I interrupt one second?
Uh-huh, sure.
I sort of feel that, you know, there's an expression, cockroaches don't come in singles. Like, if somebody is a rapist or an attack, they didn't just attack one woman in their life. You know what I mean? If somebody's a molester, usually they don't just molest one person. And if somebody's a thief and dishonest, they didn't just usually steal from one person. So isn't that somewhat of evidence? You know, this was nationally broadcast. Nobody else came forward. Doesn't that tell you anything?
You know, what you say has the merit. There is no question. If this were the only event, it would be easier to believe Judge Kavanaugh and say perhaps his recollection is simply faulty or what have you. But frankly, we see this in daily activities in the political world. Politicians will say things, and you say, It can't possibly be true, and yet they have supporters who will say, no, I know it's true. And you have to then wonder, is there a question here of interpretation? Now, if in fact this woman said Judge Kavanaugh had raped her, I suspect even years and years later, a person would remember if indeed he had raped an individual. All I am saying is that when a person says, lo mitanalef, this absolutely positively never happened, it is possible that that person believes it never happened. I'm not saying that therefore the event never occurred. I'm just saying that people will say things, they look believable, could possibly pass a lie detector test. And I don't know that we all have to be the judge and jury in those types of situations. Fortunately, for the most part, after he done Yahidi, we don't really have to judge people in that situation. However, you asked about Governor Cuomo. That is a very different situation, in my opinion, because there are people who will say these stories are absolutely believable, because in recent years, the activities of Governor Cuomo have been very aggressive, have been very strident. Let's say they're not exactly within the mainstream of proper behavior, whether it's in the sexual field or simply interpersonal skills or whatever the case may be. I am a little more troubled by the Governor Cuomo situation, plus the fact that if Governor Cuomo has done any of the actions of which he is accused, he probably does not have the temperament to be governor of New York State. By virtue of his control over people's lives, there is a serious question, and it's a little more believable here that the events he's accused of have actually happened. That's my opinion.
Okay, now, there was if this would happen against a rabbi, there was a fellow in Israel, Berland, who there were accusations against, and I know Litzman, who in general seems to believe sexual molesters or accused molesters, pedophiles, etc., he always seems to take their side. Would your opinion be any different, or you would take the same view?
I don't know enough of the facts of that particular case. I would say one thing. For a person to say, I know this person, I cannot believe that they did what they are accused of doing, I don't know that that has much weight, because people can be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They can act one way with colleagues and friends and act another way with total strangers. The Gemara sums it up by saying, Eina petrapus larayos, and I think that's very important to keep in mind. A person may be a wonderful teacher, a wonderful parent, a wonderful congregant, and yet an animal in other activities. So, again, I don't know the details of the rabbi, but certainly when people say, it can't be because I know this person, he wouldn't have done that, to me that's interesting, but I don't think it would determine what the ultimate conclusion or judgment should be.
And have you had that? Have you seen that in your practice?
Actually, I've seen the opposite in my practice. Interestingly enough, people come to me often, and they're seeking a divorce. And in one case that I'm thinking of in particular, the therapist for the husband had told me that there was infidelity, that the wife had broken her marital vows and her behavior. And yet in the course of mediation, the husband never brought up that accusation, even though he obviously believed it was true. And the wife never mentioned her behavior either. And they went ahead and simply agreed to divorce amicably with the terms that they were able to work out. So I see the opposite more often than not, that people are able to submerge their behaviors or discussion about the behaviors. When a person will talk about it constantly throughout a mediation, I had another case where every time the wife wanted to make a proposal, the husband would say, but you committed adultery. And she kept saying, I did not, it's your imagination. And I wondered after a while, this happened half a dozen times or so, if this wasn't some kind of ploy on behalf of the husband. He probably assumed all I have to do is take out the accusation of adultery, and then I could get what I want in terms of custody or lowered support payments, etc. I see it in that situation.
Well, Rabbi Rosenfeld, thank you very much for your wise advice, opinions, etc. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time, and thank you for contacting me, and Kol Tov Hatzlacha in your work. Be well.